Welcome to Microsoft's Insurance Corner with your presenters, Heather Haley, Insurance Account CTO at Microsoft.
And I'm Steve Walker, Insurance Cloud and AI Platform Specialist at Microsoft. With this series, we aim to cut through the noise to bring you practical insights on the Microsoft technologies reshaping the UK insurance sector, from agentic AI to data platforms, developer experience, security, and the future of underwriting and claims.
This series is designed to give leaders and practitioners clear, actionable perspectives you can take straight back into your organization. No hype, just real conversations, real expertise, and real value. Thanks for joining us. Let's get into today's discussion. So, Steve, today we had the fabulous Kim Wolfe on the podcast. She is someone I've admired from afar. Her background is in FSI, which she talks about on the podcast. She's done a long stint with our biggest banking customers in Microsoft. But what I was most excited about having her on the episode today for was the new perspective that she can bring to the discussion based on her role as an AI transformation lead. So she's now working with multiple customers across multiple industries. So I thought she'd have some really interesting and exciting perspective to give to us.
And she did indeed. Yeah, it was great to hear her thoughts on, well, certainly what it would take to get a use case into production. And we talked a little bit about why so many of these failed and perhaps a little bit of insights as to why that might be, some tips and tricks for structuring an organization and how one should approach looking at that in terms of, yeah, empowering the different business areas of an organization. And I just think that it was great to hear about her ethos on an organization failing fast and actually taking pride in some of the failures that you've had and trying to take the learnings from them and document them to ensure that organizations can move quicker in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. I hope we've not scared off our audience with the statistics of 40% failure of AI use cases. And I hope they've seen the light at the end of the tunnel with Kim's narrative of that being used in like a really positive feedback mechanism into the center of excellence, which she obviously champions quite a lot on the podcast. And it was exciting to hear that actually, this ethos of failing fast is actually almost a success criteria in its own right of, that ability to experiment, that hunger, that curiosity. So I think there's some really positive scenarios that came out of the talk today.
Should we get into it?
Absolutely. Let's do it.
Let's do it. Today's guest is Kim Wolfe. Kim, thank you so much for being on Insurance Corner. Would you like to take just a couple of minutes to say hi to everyone and introduce yourself?
Yeah, of course. Thanks, Steve. Hi, Heather. Really great to be on this podcast and join you today. Really excited to be here. As you said, Steve, my name's Kim Wolfe. And looking forward to our discussion today.
Fantastic. And Kim, I think one of the reasons why I was absolutely desperate to have you on the podcast today was all your experience, mostly from a financial services perspective, but also in your new role, your cross-sector. So for the benefit of the audience, do you mind sharing a little bit around your history, your FSI background, and what you're doing at the moment?
Sure. Thanks, Heather. I'm glad you're excited. That puts the expectation on my delivery pretty high, but I hope I don't let you down. So yeah, I've been in financial services for the last 6 years at Microsoft, started really in what we call major banking accounts. So I had a real experience around challenger banks, which were very cool at the time because they appear to have no legacy, even though we know that's not necessarily true, but really good experience. And then for the last 4 years before that, worked in one of the global banks. So had some really good experience around global banks, around regulation, around compliance, and all the other fun challenges that brings with it. In my new role, working on AI transformation, that's across industry. So yeah, getting a good different perspective from other industries. Of course, compliance, regulation, risk comes across pretty heavily in other industries too. So that experience from FSI has been super useful in the other industries. And I think before that, just to give you a little bit more of a perspective, I was working with a number of partners in the Microsoft space. So I really had a different perspective understanding the partner landscape as opposed to direct customer contact. So hopefully some of that experience comes to light in our discussion, and looking forward to the different topics we might discuss.
Absolutely. Where do we start? I reckon, so with your remit being AI transformation, I'd love to know, Kim, what do you think in the experience that you've seen would be the biggest misconception, I think, that the leaders have got around about AI at the moment that you're hearing?
So just to pin it down to one, Steve, is probably going to be a bit challenging. But I think if I was to think of one of the biggest misconceptions is that certainly if we look at the experience around highly regulated industries, I think a lot of customers believe that they should have all the risks and all the governance ironed out. And actually, this isn't true because they're going to be left behind. So I think if they focus on one or two use cases in that instance that will drive significant business value, they can ensure that part of the organization of data is governed, and they can go ahead and move forward in an agentic use case pretty quickly. So they don't have to have all the eggs or ducks in a row perfectly. They can just focus on one area where they can achieve that transformation, and then they can derive real significant value.
Yeah, I get that. So, I mean, I bang the drum based on my background on developer, right? That seems to be the easiest one. It's the most mature. And of course, the context that you can give the agencies is all digital inherently anyway, because you're dealing with code. But I think you're absolutely right. It's an organization's appetite towards how far they want to lean into this. And it's that fear of missing out. And if you will end up being passed by if you... analysis paralysis, right? And you take too long to try and define a strategy. It makes sense to deal with it use case by use case, right? And get stuck in.
I was going to ask Kim, with that in mind, where have you seen AI deliver the highest impact across industries?
Yeah, I mean, of course, it's not prescriptive and it's moving exceptionally fast. So I almost think by the time we listen back to this podcast, things have moved on. But at this stage, in this point of time, I think we're seeing three main areas where we're deriving the most value. Certainly customer support, because that's really bringing a lot of change and it's really helping customer agents. Supply chain management is another area which is extremely valuable, especially if organizations understand the end-to-end supply chain management process. And there still is so many manual processes across that. So by mapping it out and actually seeing where they can ingest agents, it can get significant value. And the other one, which I guess is it's almost seen as the easy use case, but I don't want it to be forgotten because it does derive a lot of value, is certainly the employee personal productivity. So those are the three areas. But I think, as I said, it's super fast moving. And we're seeing all these areas evolve over time. The most important aspect is for enterprises to understand their core IP. I know it sounds pretty basic, but if they understand their core IP and can really derive value from that, then they can use agents to really share their IP, probably to an audience or a wider audience that they hadn't anticipated before. So that becomes really interesting. And some of the questions we've had from customers is, well, if we share IP, then aren't we giving away like all our crown jewels or all our access? But actually not. If they're sharing it in a way that's digestible for customers, it becomes easily accessible, and then they can change who their audience is. So it becomes a real interesting challenge, and I think it's something that can evolve over time.
Remember, you can get in touch with the show on LinkedIn. We'd love to hear from you with feedback, thoughts, and even suggestions for the future episodes. Now back to the show. Love that. I guess I was going to ask as well, to your point around the IP, is there, I guess if you were going to, you know, having a conversation with CIO, COOs, which we're doing in your role today, is there any other sort of high friction areas for them, any other concerns they're raising around, you know, adopting AI? Or are there certain areas actually where they're feeling quite fluid and liberal around AI and, you know, high impact use cases that they're looking at pace?
Yeah, I mean, I think It's an interesting, and it is industry by industry, and it is customer by customer. I think that a lot what we're seeing is we're seeing organizations get stuck in the POC phase. So they're coming with really good ideas, which is more like around the tech. So they're getting excited by the tech, the opportunity that the tech can deliver. But they're not moving from POC to production as fast as they would like, because they're not looking at what the actual business value driver is there for the actual use case. So I think it's super important that this agentic AI transformation is led from high up. So it's coming from C-level, and then it's driving organizational change, because I think there's a lot of like resonance and a lot of I guess concerns when it's coming from IT, because they're worried about losing jobs, they're worried about processing, they're not really thinking at the end-to-end transformation as such. But we are seeing some interesting areas. We're seeing IT and HR come together, which is really interesting, because that's driving a lot of organizational change, and that's making things more effective. So I'd love to say, Heather, there's like one size fits all and like a silver bullet, but I think it's case by case, working through the organization and where they're at, and ensuring that it's actually delivering business impact and business value.
And that's where Microsoft can help, right? This is where we would expect the account team to step in and help you map out these use cases, right? And try and work from them almost top to bottom fashion and sort them based on the value that can be delivered by on a period of time basis, right? What's the quickest time to value with them? So I guess on the subject of metrics, if you sit down and meet with a brand new customer, is there any key bits of information that you will pick up from a conversation with them to say, right, okay, they're clearly switched on. They're definitely ahead of the curve here. What sort of metrics do you look out for?
Yeah, I mean, I actually wrote this metric down before Steve, because I thought it was an interesting thought that I think just to leave everyone's minds. And I mean, there is so much research and there's so many experts in this topic. But one of the research that I actually found is that research showed that more than 40% of agentic AI projects will be cancelled by 2027. So if we just take that notion, I mean, that's, you know, wow. That's like saying 60% are going to go through and 40% are failing. I mean, we have all, I think, lived through that world of IT projects failure. We've kind of grown up with that kind of mentality. But I think the agentic failing, people aren't expecting that to fail so quickly. And I think it'll become more to more to light why the projects are failing. And I think it's, I think we've already touched on this, but it's super important that organizations pursue AI based on technology and you know, based on business process rather than, and I love this, like this is like technology fascination, because it is cool tech and people are like getting sucked in to the technology and what it can do. But what business real value is it actually realizing, and how are organizations looking at different ways of working? Because it's a change across organizations. It's a change across cultures. It can't just be like some cool tech doing something faster or differently.
Love that. I guess when you hear it as a headline, the 40-60, it's dramatic. But to your point about, you know, being something for someone to take away, I have noticed that people are a bit more experimental from an AI perspective. So they seem to be more interested in failing quickly. So as a stat, for me, it doesn't necessarily scare me, but it shows a willingness to experiment, a willingness to try. Are you seeing something similar, Kim? Or are you seeing people sort of learning from that failure rate and sort of changing how they approach things?
I think failure rate in this instance is actually really beneficial. And we even had our CEO say that he appreciates, which we've never heard from a CEO before, he appreciates that a lot of the project we're working on customers will fail. I think because the cost of failure isn't that high, because you know, the investment is in the platform, the investment is in AI, but the actual projects and the scaling can happen very quickly. But it's more around the learnings from those failures, why the project failed, why it didn't adopt. And I think it's we aren't too different from the old projects in terms of did we do transformation? Did we look at culture? Did we look at organizational change? All of those areas are super important, and they do tie into one of my favorite topics. And I know everyone says it's not exciting, but it's super important in terms of center of excellence or center of governance, because this is really important to make sure that the use cases that are going through the organization are in line with the organizational culture, organizational fit, strategy, security, etc., and that the use cases that are failing that are going into the center of excellence, and they become a baseline for learning in terms of why did this project fail, how can we improve, etc. Because else you're in a meaningless proof of concept AI transformation where you don't actually move the dial. And I think it's really important that it's almost like a record of what's happening and how things can improve. And like a lot of companies, I won't say they're ignoring the governance and compliance, but I don't think they're taking it as seriously as they should at this stage.
It's very interesting. Yeah, when we work with our customer base, I see there's two different ways that enterprises tackle AI use cases. And I think you've alluded to your answer, or it may very well depend, right, I suppose. But what would you suggest would be the best way to look at this? Is would you have a dedicated innovation team, for example, that is designed, well, as you've put, designed to fail fast and to document everything that did go wrong, and their job is to get stuff eventually into production? Or would you suspect that these would come from the individual lines of business, for example, and they maybe would work alongside or perhaps a hybrid of the two? In terms of structure, what have you seen working?
So you may not like my answer because it sounds like I'm covering all my bases, Steve, but it is based on experience in that I think you need both. So I think, you know, the use cases and the improvement that have come out from just employees, for example, using productivity tooling, for them understand their day-to-day better than anyone else. So by them using agents to improve their day-to-day productivity, some of the creativity that have come out from just, you know, your standard employee doing their day-to-day job have been phenomenal and really is in a position to be able to share with others and even, you know, cross-departmental, so it can span. But I do think, you know, that when you talk about the real innovation in terms of business transformation, it should be a select group. It should be definitely spearheaded by a CEO, CXO, CDO level. And then, you know, you really need your top developers working on these use cases with a clear understanding of the technology, because you've got to make sure that, you know, because the technology is moving so fast, because there's new LLMs, because the threats are moving like faster than anyone can even keep up with, that what they're building in terms of agentic is agentic for the future. And you've got to make sure that it can transform and we can adapt as the technology changes. So it's not just like a point in time where we're building an agent for a certain task. We've got to make sure that there's a roadmap and a path for development. So you've got to encourage both areas in your organization.
Interesting. So the way I interpret that is that we still empower the different parts of the organization, be that finance, HR, IT. And if they did have an idea for an agent, for example, and they wanted to scale it, they would at least be a dedicated team then, and they would feel there's a culture change, right? That says that, yeah, I feel empowered to be able to bring this to this team, and we will. There is a clear path to bring some of this stuff into production.
Yeah, we actually had an interesting ask from one of our customers, and they said, can we build an agent for an agent? So let me explain what that means. So they asked if we could build an agent that allows them to capture all the employees' ideas around what use cases. And then the agent can actually identify, firstly, if it's a good idea, and secondly, which group this could go to. Because if you can imagine, an organization is getting, well, you either get a scenario where no one wants to embrace AI, or you've got the opposite, where employees are coming up daily with lots of agentic use cases, and you certainly want to encourage that creativity and innovation, but you've also got to be able to handle it. So it's an interesting proposition, and we actually did build something which is pretty cool. It's obviously grounded in what the organization was, their criteria for use cases and also based on business outcome criteria, KPIs, etc. But it's a complete different way of thinking, isn't it? Because initially when I heard this asked, I thought it was a bit bonkers. But actually, you know, when you start to think about it, it makes a lot of sense. And as a first pass, I think it's pretty credible to go ahead.
Yeah. I have to admit, I've similarly had the same request from customers as well, mostly to do with bandwidth management. Because, you know, as soon as these new LLMs are announced, as soon as new capabilities, you know, shared broadly on social media, for example, you then have these poor IT departments and technology teams inundated with requests to switch on X new feature and X new capability. So, Steve and I have been calling it the suggestions box or the agent suggestion box for some of our customers. And I think where I found it's been quite interesting as well is a concern that some of our customers have raised is the inefficiency of low code and system development, in that you could have three team members working on the same business case. We obviously really advocate for that, because one, it's just like it's a type of enablement, right? People going and experimenting personally with some of these scenarios. But I guess another benefit of that suggestion box is, you know, if you can get it to interact with an existing backlog or an existing submitted use case, you're creating some efficiencies there and some awareness of what's also been developed across the org. So, I'm glad it's not just us in FSI that are seeing this, or it's nice to know that it's a common one that's coming out the woodwork.
Heather and I have got some great ideas for episodes lined up in the future. So remember to subscribe to Insurance Corner wherever you get your podcasts. Now back to the show. Kim, if I may, going back to your stat about the number of proof of concepts that never leave that stage and never go into production, wondered why that might be, and any insights you can give on that, and from your experience, what went wrong, and what could we do to try and get that number down?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've covered a little bit of it, but I think it's really around just ensuring. Yeah, if I had to break it down into three areas, I'd probably say the first one is make sure this is. The AI use case is C-suite led, because then we can really map out a roadmap for AI transformation. So that's number one, like make sure you've got buy-in right at the top. The other one is invest in adoption and change management, because else you're just building a use case and we don't know how it's being implemented through the organization. And we need to make sure that it's got an adoption that doesn't stop once it's hit into production, that it's actually like doing organizational change. That's super important. It's going to change the way the customers interact with you, the way employees work, the way you respond to claims, for example. That's just the best one, isn't it? Reduce claims processing time in the shortest amount of time possible. And then I think also identifying the high impact value use cases upfront, because else you have a lot of people working on a lot of use cases and no one knows which ones to give priority to. And, you know, you've just got a lot of organizational change. And I think another area is just mitigate failure by ensuring like we embed testing, learning, failing, scaling into the organization and ensure that's culture led and it's enterprise wide. So it's like identify very quickly when a use case is failing and being able to pivot, because it's a whole new world, right? So people aren't probably aware when things are going wrong. So it's constant learning, it's constant help. And I think, Steve, you're absolutely right. Like our experience as Microsoft, we can bring the high value use cases to the table. We can validate a lot of those use cases. We can help organizations with certainly the learning, the change, and the adoption. And I don't think it's in isolation. I think it's a team effort in everyone trying to move together to ensure this is happening. And then checkpoints along the way, right? We're not going to just go and move to production without ensuring that we've reached those high level objectives.
Love that, Kim. In your opinion, based on everything you've just shared, what do you think is probably the most overlooked and potentially sort of quick wins for orgs, but I'm also thinking for insurance specifically?
Yeah, I mean, the productivity one like really comes to mind. So I think what we're seeing a lot with our workforce is just day-to-day tasks. So things like everything that's like the pain or bane of our existence, like logging our holiday, like making sure that we've done our expenses, like all of that day-to-day, which is really just like basic business as usual employee stuff. I think if we can make that a lot easier, like even training that we've got to digest, like, you know, we've all got different views and we're always reminding each other, like, there's training coming up at the end of the month. Like, I think in this world of agentic, like, we should have the agents reminding us to do the training. We should have, like, some, like, help. Like, you have training coming up in the next 3 days. I've allocated 3 hours of your calendar to do this training. Like, I feel like that's certainly areas where it can really help us just be better. Another thing that I've used agents for is certainly that when my manager or his manager sends me a meeting request, I automatically accept it because I thought that makes me look good. But actually, it's in principle, it sounds really good, but it's been counterproductive because then I don't know these meetings are coming in advance. And sometimes, yeah. Sometimes they catch me by surprise. So, yeah, I think it's, you know, that's just a simple example where using agents appear to be super like effective and make me more productive, but actually that's been counterproductive. So it's about, you know, finding the right scenarios for you.
Yeah, and I think it underscores the importance of having a decent baseline of metrics in the first place to be able to prove the value of any use case that you do bring to production, because then at least you can say, well, based on time saved, right? Or time that you're doing logging timesheets, for example, just, yeah, that's a metric that can be brought down. I think you've immediately proved value there. Kim, I want to thank you very much for joining us today on Insurance Corner. If the listeners want to get hold of you at all, where's the best place to find you?
Steve, they can find me on LinkedIn. That would be absolutely fine. So it's Kim Wolf One. That's my LinkedIn handle. So everyone can contact me there. And then, of course, I hope to be allowed back on your podcast, maybe giving a follow-up on some of the Q&A and topics that we've discussed today.
You are welcome back anytime, Kim. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Steve. Thanks, Heather. I've really enjoyed it.
So there we have it. I thought that was really good. I am still getting over the stat that she shared around about the number of failures that you have. It makes sense, but when you see it and hear it just like that, it doesn't surprise me at all. I thought what also was poignant was talking around about her thoughts on quick wins and, you know, the areas to focus on for very quickly getting up to speed with AI and looking at customer service areas and anywhere that interfaces with your customers.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because it's been somewhat of a recurring theme in our conversations with our guest speakers. So I guess what's lovely is there's a commonality in that regard. But it makes complete sense, right? The ability to service customers better, service customers in a more intuitive, a better empathetic way, whatever it needs to be. It was lovely to hear that that is still considered sort of a really high impact use case to go after.
Indeed. And you get the double effect of it. Obviously, there's a value that it will achieve. But not only that, you're also boosting the reputation of the company itself, right? If it is a customer's interface with that company and it's a modern and great experience to work with, then of course you set yourself head and shoulders above your competition who are perhaps not focusing on that area as well.
Yeah, absolutely. The front door to the organization, as it were. Again, I guess another one that's been somewhat of a recurring theme is personal productivity. So it comes up every time those gains from being able to remove the mundane, from automating tasks, from being able to focus on high value work.
That's right, yes. And I obviously come at this from a developer lens, but of course it rings true across all the organization as well. It's like I talked about having the good set of baseline metrics to understand how can we prove value. If you don't understand where you are now, you can't understand what's been improved after rolling out, say, an AI tool, for example. So yeah, personal productivity is absolutely definitely an area to focus on.
Amazing. And the final thing she obviously mentioned was that she was happy to come back again. So I'm personally looking forward to Steve, her coming back on as a guest and sharing a fabulous insurance use case that we've managed to work on as a team.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And double downing on a center of excellence and what it means and, you know, sharing some examples of customers who've done that really, really well. Yeah, I absolutely would have Kim back on again.
Brilliant.
Okay, let's leave it there. If you have enjoyed today's episode, please do review it wherever you find your podcasts. But please join us again soon on Insurance Corner. Goodbye.
Goodbye.